1 Samuel 30, I'd like to read in verse 6. It says, "Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God." David is one of the great heroes of the Bible. He is the young shepherd boy who killed a giant. He is the man after God's own heart. He is the sweet singer of Israel. He is the ancestor of Jesus the Christ. And it's intriguing to note that such a great man, one of the great heroes of the Bible, has such a dark chapter. That he was greatly distressed, and the men who were following him, though they were few, all of them were against him and wanted to stone him. David reminds us that we all suffer bouts of discouragement and depression and despair. And that there are times when life looks very dark. And we need to know how we deal with that. In fact, we need to know how to deal with it the way David did. To come out on the other side of those ruts in life as a stronger servant of God. And that's what I want us to talk about tonight. Perhaps I'm speaking to someone who right now is in this rut, is going through this feeling of despair and discouragement. My prayer is that these thoughts will help you, and I give them to you with the commendation that they have helped me greatly out of a rut I have been suffering in. So I hope that these things will help you tonight. Let's begin this idea. We're going to call it David strengthened himself in Jehovah by noting the problem that David was in. The text says David was greatly distressed. Look again at verse 6. "Now David was greatly distressed." That's a pretty simple statement, isn't it? But there was significant cause for concern here. Let me set the stage for you. David's father-in-law, who also happened to be the king, Saul, had tried to kill him twice. And finally he had plotted with David's wife to try to seize him while he was in bed and bring him to Saul so Saul could kill him. And so David fled. And he had been on the run ever since. Sometimes in the desert, sometimes in caves. For years he had been on the run. This is David, the man who hadn't done anything to deserve this. This is David, the man God had anointed as king, and yet he hasn't been king yet. So David, finally, things get so bad that he leaves the country and goes to the country of Philistia, where the Philistines live. And he was faithful and true to his Philistine rulers, at least as far as they knew. So much so that one of the Philistines wanted him to come to battle on their side against Israel. Now the rest of the Philistine lords didn't want that, so they sent David and his men home. So you've got to think David's a little down about that. Because here is an attempt I made as David to try to make myself good in the eyes of these men, these Philistines, and now they've rejected me. Maybe those years I spent here have been wasted too. I'd be pretty down about that, but it gets much worse. Look in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 30. It says, "Now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag." Notice, this is after they had gone, tried to fight in this war. They come back home. Ziklag was where they were living. "On the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag, attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire. And had taken captive the women and those who were there from small to great. They did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire. And their wives, their sons, and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. And David's two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the wife of Nabal the Carmelite, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, had been taken captive." So here David comes home and everything is gone. All his possessions are gone. His wife and children are gone. Everything's gone. And the other men who were with them, who came back, they see all their possessions and all their families are gone. Now David had previously attacked these Amalekites, but no one really knew that because when David attacked someone, he didn't leave anybody alive to tell the tale. So these Amalekites probably didn't know that David had attacked them, or else they probably would have killed the sons and daughters and wives of these men. But I want to point out, we know from verse 2 that all the women and children were safe. But David didn't know that. Just imagine, men, you come home one day. Your house is burned to the ground. In fact, all the houses in the city you live in burned to the ground. Where is your wife? Where are your children? You don't know. Imagine what that would feel like. And then add this on top of it. Verse 6. Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. So on top of all of that, you've got insurrection and everybody hates you. You don't have a friend in the world. The men who have fought with you, they want to stone you to death. They think it's David's fault that we went out. It's David's fault that we were trying to fight with the Philistines. And it's David's fault that all our wives and children are gone. And all our stuff has been sold. So let's recap how David's feeling. He didn't do anything wrong to Saul, but Saul had run him out of town. He had tried to be kind to the Philistines, but they rejected him. And now he comes home without having done anything wrong. Everything is gone. And now without having done anything wrong, all the other men are trying to stone him. I tell you, greatly distressed wouldn't have done it for me. Those words wouldn't have described me. I would have been beside myself. Things couldn't get much worse for David. The reason I bring this out, and the reason I go into this in this much detail, we need to understand, other people have been discouraged and depressed and in great distress. We are not the first. In fact, when we feel this way, we simply join a long list of Bible characters, including David, who felt this way, depressed and bitter, sometimes with good cause, sometimes without any cause. They felt down. We need to understand, we haven't contracted some horrible disease. We don't have some kind of terrible problem when we feel the way they felt. We need to understand that's part of life. I want you to go with me to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 20. I'll show you another man who feels this way. As I say that, I'm not trying to demean the idea that some people do really struggle with depression, that medication can help them. I don't mean to downplay that in any way. I'm simply saying this feeling is something that is shared by many people. And we don't need to feel like we're the only ones who have ever felt this way. In Jeremiah 20 and verse 14, Jeremiah 20 and verse 14. Listen to these words of Jeremiah. Remember, Jeremiah was a prophet of God. Listen to what he says. Cursed be the day in which I was born. Let the day not be blessed in which my mother bore me. Jeremiah 20:15. Let the man be cursed who brought news to my father saying, a male child has been born to you, making him very glad. And let that man be like the cities which the Lord overthrew and did not relent. Let him hear the cry in the morning and the shouting at noon, because he did not kill me from the womb, that my mother might have been my grave, and her womb always enlarged with me. Why did I come forth from the womb to see labor and sorrow, that my days should be consumed with shame? Jeremiah is depressed. You can hear it in everything he says. He curses the day of his birth. He says, I wish I had been aborted. I wish I had never been born. That's awfully low, isn't it? He's feeling bad. Now, I'm not saying, and Jeremiah would tell you, he didn't feel this way all the time. But there were moments, low moments, when this is how he felt. He only can express himself with the strongest language, wishing he had never existed and never seen the like he's seen. You ever felt that way? We need to understand those aren't emotions that only we feel. It's not just in times of frustration. We get farther than anyone has ever gotten. Here is a man of God who was depressed and frustrated. Jeremiah had to preach to people who refused to hear him, who wouldn't change, and who just almost all the time were persecuting him. They put him in the stocks. They dropped him in a pit. They told him to be quiet. They did everything they could to shut him up and to make him stop preaching this. No one accepted him. No one welcomed him. That would get pretty depressing. And so we can't really blame Jeremiah when he cries out in this time of distress, "I wish I'd never been born." Go with me over to the book of Job, chapter 3. Job 3. I told you to imagine a moment ago what it would be like if you came home and there was nothing there. Well, Job had something very similar to that happen to him, where his life, his family, his possessions, all of it was lost in an instant. He had a tremendous fall. And this is what he says in Job chapter 3 in response to all of that. And just plug this into what we're talking about being distressed and depressed. In Job chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, "After this Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job spoke and said, 'May the day perish on which I was born, and the night in which it was said, a male child is conceived. May that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor the light shine upon it. May darkness and the shadow of death claim it. May a cloud settle on it. May the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, may darkness seize it. May it not rejoice among the days of the year. May it not come into the number of the months. Oh, may that night be barren. May no joyful shout come into it.'" Drop down to verse 16. He says, "Or why was I not hidden like a stillborn child, like infants who never saw light? There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest." Just imagine what he was feeling here. He's crying out from the pit of his soul in despair. "The day I was born, curse it. Curse the man who said, 'You're going to have a son.'" He says, "Why wasn't I like a stillborn child? One who never knew life. How dark and sad." I'm not saying Job felt this all the time. He didn't. Very clear that he didn't feel this way all the time. But there was a moment here, wasn't there, when Job was in great depression and despair. That's not all. We won't turn to all these passages, but let me show you 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 8, where Paul says, "For we do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life." It was too much for us, Paul says. We despaired of life. We were tremendously discouraged. It was above our strength to handle. That was Paul. We think of Paul in glowing terms. But Paul had a moment like this. In Elijah's case, 1 Kings 19 and verse 4, it says, "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree, and he prayed that he might die, and said, 'It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's.'" I think Elijah was depressed. He prayed to die. "I'm no better than my father." One of the reasons he prayed to die, he thought he was the only one left. No one else is serving Jehovah. It's just me. God's going to have some things to say to him. But we can't deny Elijah was distressed and depressed. We could add Moses to the list. There are many men in the Bible who express these same emotions. The point is, these things are real. And they're very powerful. And they can drain us of hope. They can drain us of strength. And they can make us feel like we'll never get up again. Depression, distress, sadness is a deep pit. And we need to recognize that it is real. It's not pop psychology. It's not making excuses for bad behavior. It is a real problem for real people, a real emotion that men and women in the Bible endure. And we today, from time to time, go through. So let's go back to 1 Samuel chapter 30 and talk about what we do. 1 Samuel chapter 30, and read again with me verse 6. "Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Or as I put it on the board, David strengthened himself in Jehovah. Now we can look at this in one sense and say that David really didn't have any other place to go, did he? He didn't have any friends around. The men who were under him, wanted to kill him, didn't have a friend on earth. There is another text back in 1 Samuel 23 that says, Jonathan came and strengthened David's hand in Jehovah. But you don't have any Jonathan here now. Jonathan's not here. Wives aren't here. Children aren't here. No one's here to help. So David really had no other place to turn. We can look at it that way. He turned to the Lord, and that saved his life. But I don't really believe that's the way we should look at it. Because even if there are others that can help us and push us toward the Lord, each one of us in times of depression is going to have to turn to the Lord ourselves and strengthen ourselves in Jehovah. Please understand what we're talking about here. What David does is not to pray for a miracle. If we keep reading in the text, you'll see there was no miracle that happened. David didn't pray for divine intervention. What he needed was strength. David strengthened himself in the Lord. This was about David getting strength again. David being able to pick himself up from this state he had fallen into and do the things that needed to do. Often the real issue in discouragement is not eliminating all the problems of life. It's not solving and righting all the wrongs. The real problem in discouragement is us getting the strength we need to get back on the horse and to keep doing what we need to do. Steeling ourselves to get ready for what life is going to throw at us. Getting back to where we can deal with life. That's what David did here. He strengthened himself in the Lord. If we can gain the strength to face life again, we can accomplish what needs to be done with the help of the Lord. That's the moral of David's story here. But we also need to point something else out. The text says, but David strengthened himself in the Lord. This was something David did. It was something David initiated. He strengthened himself in Jehovah. What this is telling us is, in times like these, we need to reach out to the Lord. Not expect the Lord to zap us and make us feel better, but to turn ourselves to the Lord. He strengthened himself in Jehovah. He could have turned inward. He could have just sat and moped. He could have gotten mad at everyone else, but he chose to turn to the Lord. That's the key. Because the Lord is the only one that could give him the strength he needs. Well, the question you're probably asking, the question I ask as I read this text is, what does that mean? David strengthened himself in Jehovah. What does that look like? How do I do that? I believe we have several examples of David doing this very thing in the book of Psalms. So I'd like for you to turn with me to Psalm 6. Leave your marker here. Let's go over to Psalm 6. I want you to notice as we read through, we're going to read through three Psalms. And as we do that, notice the pattern. The pattern is David is going to begin in this state. He's going to begin greatly distressed, worried about life. But as he thinks on God, as he moves himself toward God and cries out to God, he's going to end the psalm rejoicing in the Lord. Look in Psalm 6 with me. It says in verse 1, O Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger, nor chasten me in your hot displeasure. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are troubled. My soul also is greatly troubled. But you, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, deliver me. O save me for your mercy's sake. For in death there is no remembrance of you. In the grave who will give you thanks? I am weary with my groaning. All night I make my bed swim. I drench my couch with my tears. My eye wastes away because of my grief. It grows old because of all my enemies. Now notice the change in verse 8. Depart from me, all you workers of iniquity, for the Lord has heard the voice of my weeping. The Lord has heard my supplication. The Lord will receive my prayer. Let all my enemies be ashamed and greatly troubled. Let them turn back and be ashamed suddenly. You see the difference there? He tells God about all he's feeling. He pours out his heart to God. Says, I'm distressed. I have so many enemies. I cry all night long. I feel like you're far away and you won't help me. And then he says, the Lord has heard my prayer. Beware of my enemies. Be careful. God's on my side. He heard me. He's going to help me. You see the change there? That's not the words of someone who's depressed in verses 8, 9, and 10. Those are the words of someone who's confident in the Lord. Knows that the Lord will help. That's strengthening himself in Jehovah. Go with me to Psalm 69. So what strengthening ourselves in Jehovah involves is pushing the despair from our mind and focusing on God instead. We need to speak to God like David did and tell him how we're feeling. We need to make our requests of him like we talked about this morning. We need to recenter our mind not on ourselves and the problems we're suffering, not on the other people and what they're doing to us, but on the Lord. That's where our mind needs to be. That's how we strengthen ourselves in the Lord. Psalm 69 and verse 1. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire where there is no standing. I've come into deep waters where the floods overflow me. I am weary with my crying. My throat is dry. My eyes fail while I wait for my God. You ever felt that way? Where you've cried till you just can't cry anymore. Where you feel so emotionally spent. David's been there. But at the end of this psalm, let's read beginning in verse 29. He says, but I am poor and sorrowful. Let your salvation, O God, set me up on high. I will praise the name of God with a song and will magnify him with thanksgiving. This also shall please the Lord better than an ox or a bull, which has horns and hooves. The humble shall see this and be glad. And you who seek God, your heart shall live, for the Lord hears the poor, and he does not despise his prisoners. So notice that again, it begins with crying and sorrow, and it ends with this cry of triumph in God. That is strengthening himself in Jehovah. That's overcoming the distress and despair of life with thoughts of God and appeals to God and confidence in God. Brethren, when we are depressed, it's not about getting ourselves better. It's about turning our lives over to the Lord. He is the one who can help us. He is the one who can recenter us. He is the one who can give us strength. And then we can take care of those things that are problems in our lives. Psalm 102 now, if you don't mind. Psalm 102. Show you one more example of this. Psalm 102 in the title of the psalm actually describes what we're talking about. Psalm 102, the title says, a prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed and pours out his complaint before the Lord. Verse 1, hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry come to you. Do not hide your face from me in the day of my trouble. Incline your ear to me. In the day that I call, answer me speedily. For my days are consumed like smoke, and my bones are burned like a hearth. My heart is stricken and withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. Because of the sound of my groaning, my bones cling to my skin. I am like a pelican of the wilderness. I am like an owl of the desert. I lie awake, and I'm like a sparrow alone on the housetop. My enemies reproach me all day long. Those who deride me swear an oath against me. Drop down to verse 18. This will be written for the generation to come, that a people yet to be created may praise the Lord. For he looked down from the height of a sanctuary. From heaven, the Lord viewed the earth, to hear the groaning of the prisoner, to release those appointed to death, to declare the name of the Lord in Zion and his praise in Jerusalem. He says, this is going to be something the generations sing about, what God did for me when I was afflicted. This is a cry of confidence and hope and praise and joy in the Lord. It's not the words of someone who is depressed. It began that way, but no longer. So you see the pattern. We come to God distressed, and we leave singing His praise. That's what David did when he strengthened himself in Jehovah. Do we honestly believe that if we come to the Lord in humility, that if we beg Him to give us and help us strength, to have strength, if we admit our weaknesses, do we honestly believe if we come to the Lord in that way, that He's going to say, no, you need to stay depressed? That He's going to say, no, I don't help my children. That He's going to say, no, I don't have any strength to spare. Do we honestly believe our God will tell us, no, I don't want you to be on the right track serving me? Our problems may be too much for us. They may overwhelm us, but they are not too much for God. Strengthen yourself in Jehovah. Please understand, as I say this, I'm not demeaning encouragement we receive from our brethren. There are a number of passages we could look at that describe how we need to encourage one another and help one another. We need to strengthen the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. Those are important things. But at the end of the day, at the end of the discussion, if we're going to get strength, it's going to have to come from the Lord. And we're going to have to choose it. Our brethren can encourage us, they can push us toward that, but it has to be our choice. It was for David. And it has to be our choice to say, I'm not going to feel this way anymore, I'm going to give this to the Lord. Our brethren can help us, they can push us toward that, but it has to be our choice. So I encourage you to strengthen yourself in Jehovah, not exclusive of your brethren, but in addition to what your brethren are trying to give you strength in. Solomon said, every word of God is pure. He is a shield to those who put their trust in Him. Proverbs 30 and verse 5. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. Notice that. Danger comes, the Lord is our shield. Danger comes, the Lord is our tower. We run to Him and are safe. Strengthen yourself in the Lord. Let's go back to 1 Samuel chapter 30. The next thing we'd like to point out is that David recovered all. Let's read the rest of the story, beginning in verse 7 of 1 Samuel 30. It says, Then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, Please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, Shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, Pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. So David went, he and the 600 men who were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those stayed who were left behind. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 men stayed behind, who were so weary that they could not cross the brook Besor. So David plans a course with the Lord in mind to pursue these people. He inquires of the Lord, Will I be able to overtake them? And the Lord says, Yes, go. So David pursues, and they stumble on an Egyptian servant who just so happened to know exactly where the Amalekite camp was. And then they go and attack the Amalekite camp. Verse 16, And when he had brought him down, there they were, spread out all... Let me try this again from the top. Verse 16. And when he had brought him down, there they were, spread out over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. Then David attacked them from twilight until the evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped, except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. So David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. And nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken from them. David recovered all. Then David took all the flocks and herds that they had driven from before those other livestock and said, This is David's spoil. The Lord blesses David's plan and gives him success. He recovers all. It's a happy ending. Family reunited. The people no longer want David to be stoned. Everybody's happy again. Great ending to that story. And in retrospect, we can see that there was great wisdom in things happening to David in just this way. For example, in chapter 31, Saul is going to be killed in this battle with the Philistines. And if David had been in the army of the Philistines, surely someone would have said he's a traitor. Or some would have said he's lifted his hand against the Lord's anointed. He killed Saul. Don't have to worry about any of those things now, do we? David was sent home. David was fighting the Amalekites. David is going to form an ordinance in Israel. Look down at verse 23. But David said, "My brethren, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered into our hand the truth that came against us. For who will heed you in this matter? But as his part is, who goes down to the battle, so shall his part be, who stays by the supplies. They shall share alike." So it was, from that day forward, he made it a statute and an ordinance for Israel to this day. What he's talking about there is, the men who had conquered the city wanted to keep back some of the spoil from the men who had stayed behind with the supplies. And David said, that's not the way we're going to be. We're going to be fair. Everyone is involved in this army. And it says that was an ordinance in Israel to this day, the time of the writing of 1 Samuel. So now we have an ordinance that wouldn't have otherwise been in place because of what happened with David. Not only that, but if you keep reading in chapter 30, we won't do it, but if you keep reading, you'll notice that David sends a lot of the spoil from this raid to the leaders of Judah. That's important, because not long now, David's going to be king of Judah. And these rulers are going to remember, David sent us that spoil from the Amalekites. So now, things are looking far better for David, aren't they? And so shortly, David's going to be king of Judah, all this trouble's going to be ended. Let me tell you, brethren, none of that would have occurred if this hadn't happened to David. None of that could have worked the way God wanted it to work if David hadn't suffered what he suffered and the distress that he went through. Let me make the point. Often in our moments of despair, we are unable to see how anything good can come out of our situation. We think that what has happened to us is too bad. The hole that we are in is too deep. The clouds are too heavy. We cannot see how anything good could come out. And I'm not saying that everything we suffer is good or that there's good behind it. That's not what I mean. Certainly wasn't true for David. But the fact that we can't see good doesn't mean there isn't good there. Elijah lamented to God, "I alone am left." God said to him, "No, you're not. There are 7,000 others who have not bowed the knee to Baal." Now, Elijah couldn't see the 7,000 others. That didn't mean they weren't there. And a lot of times when we get depressed, we can't see the good. We need to understand that if we are distressed, we can strengthen ourselves in Jehovah and we can find the good that God has in mind for us. Please understand, I'm not saying that every situation always turns out wonderfully in life. That's not true. But God can make things good. At the end of the story of Joseph, he says, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." And God can mean things that are evil in our lives for good for us. The point I'm trying to make is that all of this, all of the future of David, hinged on one pivotal moment. Imagine if David had not strengthened himself in Jehovah. If he had just been despondent and depressed, would his wives and children have died? Would he have ever even been king? Hard to say. Would his men have stoned him? Or would his men have just seen that he was depressed and so they said, "Well, let's just try to go get our wives and children back on our own," and failed? Perhaps most importantly, would Jesus Christ have been born through the line of David? It all hinges right here, doesn't it? If he had given up and quit, all of those questions surface. If anyone can handle the problem of depression, it's the Lord. If anyone can cheer us up when we are down and give us hope, it's the Lord. I want to take you to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. And we'll finish here. When you're depressed, I urge you to do what David did. Strengthen yourself in Jehovah. And He will help you. And He will bless you. Because He loves you. Our discouragement and our despair can sap us of strength. Can drain us of our desire. It can leave us empty and hurting. But God can fill the hole if we're willing to let it. In Hebrews chapter, let's actually start in chapter 11, I'm sorry. Hebrews 11 and verse 32. The Hebrew writer has listed these great men and women of faith, and he says in verse 32, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens." Notice especially that in verse 34. Out of weakness were made strong. Now let's drop down to chapter 12 and verse 1. He says, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." The Hebrew writer conjures up a picture for us of the Olympic Games, and it is a cloud of witnesses that sits around us as we are preparing to run the race. They are watching us. They are witnesses, which indicates they have something to say. They have a testimony to give. And those witnesses are the greats of faith. Imagine running in the Olympics, and instead of fans in the stands, it's all the great Olympians of all time, and they're watching you. That's what we have. The greatest men and women of faith who have ever lived are our witnesses. And brethren, I have to ask, can we say, "I just don't want to run anymore"? In the face of Jeremiah, can we go to a man like Elijah, who was, although not the only one, one of only 7,001 who was faithful to the Lord, and say, "Elijah, I'm too discouraged. I give up"? Can we really look in the faces of men and women who have suffered exactly what we have suffered, or far worse, and say, "It's too hard for me"? These are people who were stoned and sawn in two. These are people who live in dens and caves of the earth. Can we look at them and say, "It's harder for me than it was for you"? He says, "We are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, so let us run the race with endurance." Gathering strength from our forefathers in the faith, looking at men like David and saying, "That's who I want to be." He might have gotten discouraged, but he never gave up. David had a dark chapter, but I want to point out, it was only that. It was only a chapter. And there were far greater chapters ahead for him. It was just a footnote in the life of a great man of God. And so there might be someone here tonight who is struggling with this very thing. I want you to know, if you're struggling with depression and despair, there is a better way. And you can make this be just a footnote in your life, or you can allow this to define you. You can allow this to drag you down and sap you of the strength that you have. I beg of you, strengthen yourself in the Lord. If there's someone here tonight that we can help to in some way beat this problem or any problem of sin in your life, or if there's someone here who is not yet a Christian, we urge you to come to the front now and make your life right as we stand and sing to encourage you.